from the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos. We're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's a place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Well, this is our 13-year anniversary show, and so I'm going to tell all of you a little bit about this project that I've been working on for, we'll say, a good year. This is, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not going to give out, you know, too many details, but just enough so that you have something to look forward to. Now, of course, I am joining all of you from the Bermuda Triangle base here in Boquerón, Puerto Rico. And as you all probably know, I bounce around and I travel a lot. And boy, over the past year, the amount of travel was just incredible. As a matter of fact, once I go to Mexico here later this month, that means within the period of a year, I will have literally been all over North America. From Canada to Mexico to the Caribbean to California to, you know, all over the East Coast. I mean, crisscrossing this great planet, or at least this part of the planet. And here in Puerto Rico, for those of you who have never been here, and Shelley has been here a number of times, so she can vouch for this, you have just an amazing amount of dramatic and beautiful various landscapes and settings. I mean, for example, here on this island, which is only 100 miles wide and 35 miles from top to bottom, there is a rainforest on the east coast, which is, in fact, the only rainforest, which is also a U.S. national park, the El Junque. And yet on the west coast, you have the dry forest, which is a desert-like landscape with cactuses growing. And a lot of people think of an island as being a flat area, but in fact there are mountains here in the middle of Puerto Rico that are higher than the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. I mean, there are mountains here in the middle that are well over 4,000, close to 5,000 feet tall. On the other hand, you go just a few miles off the coastline, well, you have the deepest point in the Atlantic Ocean, the second deepest point in the world, the Puerto Rico Trench, which is almost 30,000 feet deep, so deep that you could almost take Mount Everest and fit the whole thing down under the water. So the landscape here is incredibly dynamic. And I've always wanted to shoot something here that takes full advantage, best we can, of these different areas. And, you know, over the years, I have produced a variety of movies, some of them documentaries, some of them narrative comedies, like Inbred Rednecks, for example, which I made when I was only 19, going on 20. I made a really low-budget horror movie called The Devil of Blue Mountain, complete with nudity. So
I forgot to cue up the applause track.
Yeah, yeah.
you need to remind me of these things.
And so it occurred to me that while I have this base set up here, that I've got, you know, access to all these wonderful locations, and I needed to shoot something here that incorporates them all, because there's a tendency when you have a proclivity to filmmake to sit down and write some screenplay and let your imagination just fly wild and come up with all of these sensational, you know, scenarios. And that's easy to do on paper. But then when it comes time to actually make the movie, well, now it's a whole different ballgame. You've got to go out and you've got to dig up a lot of money and a lot of people to help you put this together. So the smart thing to do is to instead take a look at the resources that you have on hand and say, what kind of a story can I make with what I have? And so I knew I had this great location. And, of course, for those of you who don't know, C. Eric Scott and I have been friends for a long, long time, 15 to 20 years. And we worked on many different projects over the years. Of course, we worked together. He was my producer. I was the talent. And we shot content for every single episode of the series Paranormal Paparazzi on the Travel Channel for a whole season. We've also worked together on projects for like Nat Geo. We worked together on the Warner Brothers movie, The Apparition, and Miss Shelley Wright was a part of that production as well. So we worked together on a lot of stuff, and because of that, you know, Eric and I are always talking to each other about ideas, and Eric is one of these guys who is always going out and buying the newest, latest, greatest production toys. And so when he gets new cameras and new lights and new microphones, we want to do something great with those things. And Eric, at this point, how many cameras do you think that you actually have?
Well, I actually just downsized the number that I have, but I still have probably like 7 or 8 at least.
And we want everybody to understand something that, you know, all the rage a few years ago was, you know, high definition stuff, like 1080p high definition. And the funny thing is the quality of an image is determined by its size. And so if you hold up your hand and you look at the palm of your hand and you imagine a postage stamp in the lower right-hand corner, that's about the size of a high-definition image. But a 4K image is the size of your entire hand. It's ridiculously big. It's incredibly clear. It's so clear that you could take something shot in 4K and you could project it on an IMAX screen and it would still look crystal clear. And so Eric has got some of these great 4K cameras, and it still has a film look, but it lives up to all the standards of quality that people expect these days. So I was thinking, okay, he's got these cameras. I've got all these locations, and I came up with a story, and I contacted Eric, and I talked to him about it, and we thought, well, we're not going to have to spend that much money to make this if he's got the equipment, and I've got the locations, and he could stay here with me, but who's going to act in it, right? How are you going to pay actors? And we realized, hey, we don't have to pay any actors if we're the actors. And so what we have created here is a feature film produced by the two of us. I guess you would say written by me, but story elements by both of us. And it's directed by me, and it stars the two of us. Now, Eric, is this the most acting that you've ever done in a production?
Yes. That is correct. That it would be the most acting I've ever done outside of a little class in film school, but that was it.
That's right. And Eric, he's worked in production for so long, he has actually met a lot of guys who have done the same thing, who have worked both behind and in front of the camera. He went to film school with a lot of people who've had great success in Hollywood. And so essentially what we have done here is create a movie that is all shot. We actually we shot most of it last year, but we had to shoot some more of it this year. And we actually literally wrapped it yesterday. It's called The Commodore. And this film is going to be submitted to all the major film festivals. It's going to go to Telluride and Sundance and Tribeca and Cannes. I mean, all of them are going to get it. Now, that doesn't mean they'll accept it, but they're going to review it, and if they decide to screen it, well, then we are going to obviously be happy to go to those festivals and see how people react and build our relationships with the movie-making community. The Commodore is a comedy, and our crew was so tiny that aside from Eric and myself, I met an extremely talented young man who lives here a couple doors down from me named Raphael. And he helped us immensely. He's also in the movie. And then, of course, my wife, Lauren, who especially helped with some of the puppeteering and animal wrangling that went on for the production. The Commodore is about it is about an old salty sailor who has a troubled past, who finds a pirate's treasure, and after he finds the treasure, is shocked to discover that it is not only cursed, but that it is also haunted by the ghost of the pirate. And from there, hilarity ensues. And so I play the Commodore, and I know what you're thinking. I'm way too young and handsome to act like an old, rugged, worn-down, salty seaman, right? That's what you were thinking, Sam.
Yeah, especially after you said salty seaman.
Yeah. But no, no. I really got into the role. I ran myself down. I gained some weight. I smoked a lot.
How hard was that for you?
It was. it kind of naturally worked out, you know. Not to mention the fact, Sam, you and I are about the same age, and we're getting some white hairs now, aren't we?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And some weird hairs.
I am saying now I don't have the Clooney anymore. I'm saying I have the what's the dude from Justified? The Timothy Oliphant. That's what I'm saying I got now, cuz we have you're blonder, but I've got the Oliphant gray. It's no longer the Clooney gray.
It's not as obvious on me. Because I don't have the dark hair. But, okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I will tell you a little bit more about this production and what you can expect and maybe how you can see it and all that kind of stuff. And then from there, we'll morph into some of the other interesting topics that we want to discuss this second hour of the show, including what the latest scientists are telling us about the latest research on parallel universes. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, and this is Speaking of Strange.
A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Last night I dreamt of San Pedro.
Yeah, hopefully, if you're sitting in a cold place right now, you will let your imagination soar a little bit and will bring just a touch of warmth from the tropics radiating to you through your speakers, through your earbuds. Because, yes, even though it's January, I have been out there snorkeling, swimming, playing with dolphins, and filming underwater attack scenes. And it's amazing that you can do that even in January, but that's one of the great things about, you know, being down here near the equator. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. And I'm not trying to make you jealous if you're into warm weather. What I'm doing is explaining one of the reasons that we decided to shoot this upcoming feature film, The Commodore, here in Puerto Rico. And I mentioned before the break that I play the Commodore, and Mr. C. Eric Scott plays the pirate. And this movie is R-rated because there is a lot of nudity with Eric and myself. No, I'm kidding. That doesn't happen. It's got some pretty gritty language, wouldn't you say, Eric?
Yes, to say the least.
Yeah. Eric's, I think, concerned about his mother seeing it. Is that right?
Yeah, I may not even tell her about it, you know, as well as she knows. I've just been going on vacations, you know, to points unknown.
My mom, I'll just tell her, what do you expect, you know? Actually, after I published the Gringo Maniac Murder Spree, I think I sat down with that manuscript and I did a search on the F word and it came up like 400 times. So
that
you
adds
know,
some
I think,
salty language.
Yeah, I've crossed that barrier. So Eric, without again going into too much detail, explain what the reaction of the locals has been to you running around Puerto Rico dressed up as a pirate.
Well, I guess people apparently like pirates here because, you know, you can't go very far without somebody wanting a photograph with the pirate. So I guess people like pirates, I guess, is the bottom line. Despite mm-hmm. them being, you know, I guess throughout history, pirates are generally bad, but I guess people forget all of that, so...
That is kind of weird. I mean, pirates are really thought of with a great deal of affection these days. And as a matter of fact, here in on this part of the island of Puerto Rico, the big, you know, the pirate, the son of the culture is Roberto Cofresi, and he was the most famous and successful pirate during his time. But a lot of people around the world don't even know his name now. Some of his earrings are on display at the Smithsonian. And he ended up being executed at El Morro, which is a big fort here in Puerto Rico. And he used to do horrible things, they say. Like if he captured you and he didn't like you, he would nail you to the deck of your ship. The deck of his ship and let you die of exposure. And yet he's kind of thought of fondly as a Robin Hood type character, and they say that you know he was generous, but historical documents would tend to indicate otherwise. So I don't know. I've always thought that was odd because you know pirates were really really scary people. Do you have any thoughts, Shelley, on why are ladies attracted to the pirate image in some sort of bad boy way?
I'm not. Sam, are you?
Well, I'm just curious. You've been down there in Puerto Rico. Have you ever been over further in the Caribbean, over to, like, the Cayman Islands? Josh?
Yeah. Are you asking me? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been to the Cayman Islands.
Are you familiar with the legend of Big Black
yes.
Dick?
Yes, I am.
Because yes, I was I just doing some research on him. And, you know, unable to subdue his efforts to regain his freedom, those French captors tossed Richard overboard near a Caribbean island, which may have been Grand Cayman Island. And now he's a pretty famous pirate down there.
Yeah, well, I went to Grand Cayman several years ago, and when you get off the ship and you walk up into the main tourist area,
he's right there.
There's a big, giant, like wooden cutout of Big Black Dick mm-hmm. and a gator. I guess a sign that tells his story.
Well, the story goes on. After he miraculously reached Lamb, he served for several years laboring in a sugar cane field where he learned how to turn the sugar cane into the Caribbean's finest rum, which would one day be a seven-layer rum known as Prism.
No, it's Spectrum.
Spectrum.
Yeah. And we actually did go to Sanabio's recently, and we got pretty good liquored up there. And they have a giant jar that sits on the counter that says Spectrum on it.
Is it a big seller?
It looks like it because there's barely anything left in the jar.
I think it was empty.
It was almost empty, yeah. And that was a big jar. I mean, it was like bigger than a big pickle jar, way bigger. So I'd say that's a good sign.
Which is the international unit for measuring. Is it bigger than a big pickle jar?
here in the islands, you know, pirates are thought of as good, you know, interesting sort of heroic figures. I mean, there's a statue of the pirate Cofresi here that rises from the midst of a lagoon. So, you know, we kind of like played on some of that stuff in order to be inspired, I guess you could say, to create the story of the Commodore. So the movie now has been, the rough cut is about 90% done. All the footage has been shot. So now Eric is going to go back up to Washington, D.C. He's going to take that rough cut and he's going to hammer it into a final, perfected, polished film. Eric, do you want to throw out here on the airwaves any kind of an idea of when you expect you will have the final product?
I'm hoping to have it done as quickly as possible, but certainly within the next month or two, I hope to be finished. Certainly by the first deadline that we need to have it ready by. So.
Yeah, and then we will begin that process of submitting it to film festivals. But the thing is, you are sometimes allowed to screen before you send it to a film festival if you screen it in a rough state. So we might actually arrange a screening or two of the rough stuff around here. I don't really know about that yet because. If you're going to premiere a movie at one of these big festivals, they usually want it to have never been presented anywhere in its final state, and you certainly cannot charge tickets or anything like that for it. So, I guess for now, that's the long and the short of it. Is there anything else that we should tell people to whet their appetites for the Commodore, Eric?
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to discuss whether or not we want to release any little bits and pieces, maybe even a trailer or something on online. I guess we'll have to see what the regulations are, but I'm sure you'll be able to inform people of that sort of thing if we do that.
Well, I missed why would there be restrictions on it? I missed that part.
Well, okay, when you're going to submit a movie to a film festival, basically – there are one of two piles that it can go into right off the bat. One of them is this is a movie that has never been shown before, and so therefore we're going to premiere it at your festival. And then the other pile is this movie has been shown before, but we want to show it at your festival. And so you have to think very carefully about where you want to premiere it because you can only do that one time. And if you're going to premiere it at a festival, which gives you a higher chance of them screening it and promoting it and making a big deal out of it, well, then they have restrictions on how much of it has already been shown in one form or another to qualify as a premiere or not. So that is to say, in some cases, they say you can't submit it as a premiere if you have shown it and charged a ticket price for it. But if you've shown like rough copies to get audience feedback, that's okay.
Gotcha.
So All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's dig into this story that I find really intriguing. Headline is, Are We Limited in Our Universes? Prepare to be mind-blown by these multi-universe theories. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
Kicking with your torso, boys getting high and the girls even more so. Wave your hands if you're not with a man. Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
I got, you got, we got everybody. I got the gift, gonna stick it in the goal. It's time to move your body. Music for your masses. Give no head, no backstage passes. Have a proper giggle, I'll be quite polite. But when I rock the mic, I rock the mic. You got no love and you're with the wrong man. It's time to move your body. If you can't get a girl, but your best friend can, it's time to move your body.
Where the unusual becomes usual, going out to high strangers around the globe. This is Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and hopefully you'll go to speakingofstrange.com to find links to all kinds of interesting things. You'll find a link to Wright's Coin Shop. You'll find a link to the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tour. And, you know, just before Christmas, I was on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And I revealed on that program that I have a photograph currently posted on my website, joshuapwarren.com, that shows what some believe is the Gargula. Now, hopefully you remember months ago on this program, I did a very extensive hour on the Gargula. And the Gargula is this 6-foot-tall, demonic, bat-winged creature that terrorizes certain people around the town of Ensenada in Guanica here in Puerto Rico. Well, somebody says they've captured a picture of this thing. Go to joshuapwarren.com and scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and take a look for yourself and let me know what you think of this image. JoshuaPWarren.com. There is no period after the P. And we were talking during the break about when this movie, The Commodore, finally premieres this year at one of these film festivals. And, you know, there's no guarantee that's going to happen, but we hope it does. It will premiere somewhere. Then we're going to let everybody know, and hopefully we can have a nice big crowd of supporters there who will come and help get the word out about this movie, because we think it's really funny, and I think you will too. All right, let's get back to some of the weird news happening in the world. And this is a story that claims to, well, blow your mind. The theory of parallel universes is not a new concept. The term multiverse has been used as early as 1895. But what exactly is a parallel universe? Well, the theory of parallel universes states that many universes exist parallel to each other within a large multiverse. Not all scientists believe in these separate universes, but one cosmologist from the California Institute of Technology believes that he may have captured the first ever glimpse of a parallel universe. Now, you probably heard about this. Happened a while back. This guy used data from a telescope there at the European Space Agency, and he subtracted cosmic microwave background models from Planck's picture of the universe. And he found that there were regions that were a lot brighter than they should be, like 4,500 times brighter. And this finding is consistent with the idea that sometimes these parallel universes sort of bump into each other and leave behind what they call a bruise in the form of a ring of hot photons during a collision. So basically, you look out there and you see areas where you have these really hot spots and there's no explanation for what causes them. Hey, maybe it's where these universes are bumping together. So this is obviously on the cutting edge of things, but what they are saying here in this piece from thescienceexplorer.com is that ultimately we can break down the possibilities into four different models of the universe. So I'm going to go over each model and get feedback from my expert panel of scientists here. Sam, are you still awake?
Yes.
Okay.
I am
Shelley,
here.
Are you awake?
Yeah.
See Eric Scott?
Yes. Yes.
he's half that's, there.
That sounded wishy-washy. Okay. Here is the first theory. It is called the infinite universe theory. Now, an infinite universe is one that is flat, so to speak, and stretches infinitely in space and time. Since there is a finite number of ways particles can be arranged in an infinite universe, eventually these arrangements will repeat. Okay, so let me pause there for a second. So even though the universe itself is infinite, there will reach a point, supposedly in this theory, when there are only a finite or a certain amount of things that can happen, and so you'll start to see those things eventually repeat. So picking up from there, this means that if you were to venture out far enough, you would run into infinite versions of yourself, some living the exact same life as you right now, and others that are completely different. That's theory number one. Okay, now, did that make sense, Sam?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How does that sound to you? Does that feel in your gut like a possible explanation?
Well, yeah, but I mean, already off the bat, the human mind is going to have a hard time wrapping its head around infinite.
Like, right.
We're not going to be able to translate infinite. So you can, just by even thinking about, like, yeah, I understand that, you don't understand it. You know what I'm saying?
I think if I could put this in the context of Doctor Who episodes, I think it would be just brilliantly clear.
I mean, I do see that, like, you know, if given an infinite amount of options, there will be eventually an infinite number of Sam Steels living an infinite amount of lives that are just a hair different here or there. Eventually, one doing exactly the same things, wearing exactly the same clothes on exactly the same day of exactly the same year of his life as right now. But I can't really wrap my head around that, you know.
Shelley, can you put this in the context of a Doctor Who episode?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm sort of thinking along the lines of the Pandorica opens. Give me a minute.
Okay. All right. Well, Eric, how about you?
To me, this just sounds like one big doppelganger universe theory, you know. So that means that
Or would it be like a Bizarro, like, you know, Bizarro Superman? Like, would it be the opposite version of yourself and an opposite version of the universe somewhere? I mean, sounds weird to me.
All right. Well, all good points. Shelley, anything to add, or shall I move on?
Move on.
Okay, very well. Next theory is called the bubble universe. Now, a bubble universe is based on the idea that after the Big Bang, the universe expanded by inflating like a balloon. And the theory suggests that some parts of the universe stopped inflating while others continued, resulting in bubble universes that may have completely different laws of physics. And according to the theory, our universe has stopped inflating, which is why we have stars and galaxies. Wow. Okay, so imagine you blow up a balloon and you squeeze it. You take your hand and you just squeeze it. You're going to have certain parts popping out between your fingers and certain parts that are compressed. And there is, I guess, according to this theory, some of these areas are a little more stable, the ones that are compressed between your fingers, and the ones that are popping out still are still developing, I guess. Is your mind blown yet? Have I blown any minds?
I'm having a harder time wrapping my head around the second theory.
Me too, and my head is hurting.
Shelley's head's always hurting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But well, that one's that case, less, yeah, we don't, which of these theories, and how many of them are there, but which of these theories is embraced by Michio Kaku?
Well, I don't think that he is embracing anything, but there are four
then
of them.
I will not embrace any of them either.
Now, with the bubble theory, does that have any correlation to, say, travel in space, for instance? Because if a layer was more compressed, in i.e. area in between your fingers, would that be a quicker place to get to in space-time travel?
Yeah. Very good point, Sam. I knew you had it in you. I think you're right about that. It would actually mean that some parts of the universe should be much more accessible than others.
Shelley, I'm not all dumb.
We're coming up on a break. When we come back, I will tell you about the last two theories about what the shape of the universe is. And, hey, if you don't understand this, don't feel bad. The point is, nobody does. These are just theories. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is our 13-year anniversary edition of the program, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Oh,
And we're in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and coming up next hour is what we call the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when it's so late at night that we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So you can determine whether or not you want to stick around for that. But right now, we're finishing up a conversation that, you know, I find this very interesting. Some of you may think, oh, I'm just so confused, I don't even want to hear this. But these are the big questions. What kind of universe do we live in? And here are theories that scientists have been proposing. Here's theory number three, daughter universe. Daughter universes are hypothesized to be a product of outcomes or choices, meaning each choice we make spawns a new universe. So, for example, let's say you get acceptance letters for two different universities, A and B. Well, our universe would then create daughter universes, one where you go to University A and one where you go to University B and one where you do not go to either, and you just get to be conscious and of one of these choices. I kind of like that one.
The choose-your-own-adventure universe.
Yes, thank you. That's a very good way of putting it. That puts people and consciousness in control. I think you summed it up very nicely there, Shelley. Job well done. And let me just go ahead and jump to the last one, mathematical universe. That doesn't sound very fun, does it? Mathematical universes are ones in which mathematics is a physical reality, and the mathematical structure that makes up our universe is not the only structure that exists. Separate universes are formed by different initial conditions, physical constants, and mathematical equations. So that seems like the coldest one. Like, hey, there's a structure in place, and it's going to work the way it works. Everything seems predetermined. There are laws set in stone. If it works that way, then what's the point, right? We should all just commit suicide.
Well, I think that every day anyway. But
yeah.
Which one of those do you think is the most plausible out of those four contenders?
I like the daughter universe theory.
Don't call me daughter.
How about you, Shelley? I know what you like. You like the daughter universe theory, right?
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Could you? Okay. She was a little away from the mic. She didn't even lean in for that one.
What do you think,
it's funny because I was thinking about the choose your own adventure stories earlier today and about how I whatever choice I made, I always got killed in the books.
Well, I don't know what that says about you.
Can you make a quick evaluation of the daughter universe, like other than choose your own adventure, what was the quick summary of it again?
Well, that basically your consciousness is involved, that you've got choices, and each choice you make spawns a new universe. So, you know, if the example they use is if you get an acceptance letter from two different universities and you choose one, well, there is still a universe where you would have chosen one or the other or neither, and you're only conscious of one.
I'm going to go with the first one. I'm going to go with the
expanded universe thing.
The infinite universe.
The infinite universe.
I'm going to go with that one. I think that one has the most plausibilities. And then, like, you go with the Matrix in it, you know, like where there's sometimes glitches in the Matrix. That's what deja vu is. Like, mm-hmm. Maybe like when we've hit that repetitive point, which would be so far. I mean, think about it. Like, yes, at some point you could take the you know, the numerals in a million-digit number. And, you know, I mean, when would they repeat? It would be a long, 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 long time. But in universal terms, I mean, it would be far beyond any of our lifetimes.
See, I would have thought that you would have chosen the mathematical universe, Joshua, instead of the daughter universe.
I wrote, use the Force.
Aside from that,
I am the Commandant.
The Commodore.
Oh.
Yeah, I was thinking Commandant LaSant, remember from Police Academy?
I love those movies.
Lassard.
Lassard. Thank you. Commandant Lassard. You're the Commandant in my book, Joshua.
Well, thank you, Sam. The kindest thing you've ever said. Let's, gosh, it's time for us to take our break.
Oh, yeah, you are correct. I got lost in there. Sorry.
We're having too much fun.
I know.
It will be time for the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.